Hello everyone, and welcome to the first in our series of measurement practice podcasts, which we've rather grandly entitled Bridging the Gap, Communications Measurement for the 21st Century. This first podcast is in support of AMEX Measurement Month. My name is Mike Daniels and I'm principal of the Measurement Practice, a small group of highly experienced practitioners in measurement, research, communications and technology. We specialize in helping companies use measurement to drive more effective communications. This first podcast kicks off a series of podcasts which will look at how consumer and advertising research has become so embedded within the marketing function that the sector now commands revenues of over $44 billion, according to recent research by SMR. Being as generous as we can, our best estimate of revenues from communications research per se is substantially less than just 10% of that figure. So is there anything different about these other disciplines? Is it that the business need is simply clearer and more direct? Or is there a deeper issue about how PR professionals engage, or perhaps fail to engage, with data and research? Or are measurement companies failing to explain the value of measurement correctly and precisely? To discuss this idea of what counts as real value to PR, I'm delighted to welcome three leading measurement experts: David Rockland from Ketchum Global Research and Analytics, Angie Jeffrey from Advertising Benchmark Index, and Guy Corbett from Corbett Communications. I think that all of us working in communication measurement believe it has the potential to dramatically enhance the effectiveness of communications, both off and online. But many of us who've been doing measurement for some time are really puzzled that it remains something of a minority activity. In this conversation, I hope we can uncover some learnings from the success of market research and advertising research. Providing us with a perspective from her extensive PR and advertising research experience, Angie Jeffrey is a VP for brand management at a disruptive new research agency called Advertising Benchmark Index. Angie, firstly, we must congratulate ABX on its prestigious Gold Award at the SMR conference, a really fantastic achievement against some very major competitors.
Thank you, Mike. So
perhaps you could give us a brief overview of the innovative work that ABX is doing and your long experience in communications research.
Yes, thank you, Mike. Long experience. I almost hate to admit it, how long it's been. But I did have a long career in public relations, first of all. I worked primarily in agencies and saw a need for measurement, and our agency ended up developing a little tool called PR Track for measurement, and that was probably the first dashboard tool for measuring publicity in the industry. It was acquired a couple of different times. It's still, to my knowledge, being used by Burrell's Luce. So I spent a decade following that in PR measurement and recently moved to the dark side of advertising measurement. Quickly on ABX, this company is the first to measure ad creative for clients and all the competitors in all media types, with delivery in 24 hours at the lowest prices in the industry. We use large consumer panels, proprietary technology. We've measured 125,000 ads in the last 4 years, and everything correlates to outcomes. So it's very exciting to see the work that we're able to do. Thanks, Mike.
Fantastic, Angie. Thanks so much for that brief update. I'm also absolutely delighted to have David Rockland with us here today. David has possibly more experience of developing and implementing measurement programs for a broad range of companies and organizations than almost anybody I know. He's currently chairman of Ketchum's research and analytics practice and was previously chair of AMEC as well as chair of the IPR Commission on Measurement, which Angie and I are also members of. David combines, pretty uniquely in my experience, extensive experience and knowledge of market research, statistical techniques, and econometric modeling as applied to PR and communications. So David, could you just give us a brief overview of your research career and measurement career?
You bet, Mike, and thanks so much for including me in this. I guess in terms of a research career, I spent the good first half of my working life in public affairs and eventually had my own firm doing that in Washington and wound up selling it to Roper Starch, a market research company that eventually became part of, and in fact, the Washington office of GFK. And after a couple years there, that came to Ketchum to start, or really to build a research business at that time, had three or four people, and we grew it to about 125. I do have the good fortune of having been able to actually retire from Ketchum. And when you retire from Ketchum, when you're the CEO, they give you the fancy title of chairman. And so I'm sort of semi-retired at this point, but also my wife, who has an extensive amount of experience, she was the head of polling for the major news network in the United States, CBS News, and she and I have started a little firm as well during through which we service both Ketchum clients, and I fulfill my role as chairman, but also we have a fair number of other clients at this point as well. So again, Mike, thanks for including me.
Oh, thank you, David, very much. We'll be extremely interested in your insights from your various research activities. So finally, but certainly not least, we wanted to ensure the voice of the client is heard loud and clear. So I'm really pleased to welcome Guy Corbett to our small group for today's discussion. Guy runs his own communications consultancy and is also an associate of the measurement practice. He's worked for many years agency side, specializing in corporate communications and strategy, and has always been a strong proponent of the benefits of measurement in delivering more effective communications. So Guy, maybe you could just give us a few words about your career as it pertains to measurement and communications.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I mean, I spent 20 plus years in big UK agencies where I was lucky enough to work with clients as well known as BT, eBay, and Legal & General, all of whom had sort of strong evaluation programs in order to work out how to deliver more effectively. And of course, I worked for many other brands besides as well. Since setting up as an independent, I helped businesses with their sort of strategy and reputation issues. And my interest in measurement has really always been to work out which half of what we're doing is worth carrying on with and which half is best dropped, really just to work out how to improve and deliver more effective work for our clients.
That's great. Thank you, Guy. And it actually segues, that introduction of your segues quite neatly into our first key topic that I'd like us to consider. What I'm interested in is trying to understand what, in your experience, encourages clients to embrace measurement, to take it seriously enough to think about spending money on it. And on the other hand, are there some common threads that you see that run through why many PR professionals still don't seem to get much beyond clippings books? They seem to be resistant to the idea of using measurement in their practice. Any thoughts on what makes people positively embrace measurement and what makes them shy away from it?
Okay, so at a sort of base level, I think there are probably two reasons. I think one essentially is to sort of test the agency or in-house, to test the people spending the budget, which is, we spent this money, are we getting anything for it? And it's a sort of end of term summary of what the report card looks like. And if you like, that's probably the most common reason. It's not necessarily the best. The second reason is actually to try to learn from what has been done in the past and to try to improve it. And I think that's probably less well developed in the comms industry than it is in other sort of marketing disciplines, in particular in sort of advertising and online. And I think just an observation at this stage in terms of spending money, I think very often that's the difficulty that the industry has. And I think it's easy to forget that whilst there are some businesses that spend an awful lot of money on their comms and therefore have big budgets to assess the effectiveness of those, if you like, the vast silent majority of the industry operate on much tighter budgets, and therefore they're looking for effective ways of measuring what they're doing and learning from it without spending big budgets. And that generally brings people back to the question of sort of cuttings books or other fairly basic measures.
I was just inviting either you, David, or Angie to comment on Guy's thoughts, just to see whether there is something about the success that you've had, David, which I think is pretty extraordinary in the industry, where you really are growing measurement as a component of basic PR functionality within your clients at a great rate. Do you think there is any common threads that Guy was talking about that you would pick up on or that you would disagree with?
I think he mentioned several things that to me struck home. One having really to do with the budget size. We often go, you know, how come they spend so much more money on market research, on advertising research than they do on PR measurement? And the reality is because the budgets for marketing and advertising are so much larger, usually, than public relations. And so it's sort of an easier sell, if you will, to say that, you know, therefore, if we're going to spend this rather large marketing budget or advertising budget, we want to make sure it's being spent well or we're targeting correctly and that the creative's going to work, you know, best as possible. You know, to me, that budget issue and the amount spent on the relative disciplines, to me, is sort of one of the bigger breaks. I guess I might add to that in terms of where you wind up with a disconnect is, you know, if you look at people who go into advertising, not in terms of the creative side, but let's say the ad buying side and or in the marketing side who get MBAs in marketing, they tend to be fairly quantitative people. In other words, the left side of their brain tends to be fairly well developed. In PR, most people who go into PR, at least coming from Ketchum, most people I've worked with over time, you know, are very much more of the right side, the creative side of the brain. You know, they major in English, they major in history and philosophy and communications. And so numbers and the use of numbers to create better programming is more of a reach, frankly, than I would say in some of the other disciplines that buy marketing and or advertising research.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought, and one that I've been exploring in some recent presentations to interested groups, because I wonder whether, and I was going to throw this open to Angie briefly to see whether she agrees that there may be just a wiring problem here. I don't want to make it crude, but basic. But is there a wiring difference between PR and marketing professionals, for instance? Angie, do you have a view?
Yeah, I would have been tempted to say yes. Before my last almost 3 years in ad research, I don't think the ad research people or marketing people are necessarily big lovers of numbers. They may be, and they certainly are educated in them, which is different, and that agrees with David. But I know they are people who are interested in insights. That insights is not a nice to have; it is critical. For moving forward, for placing your media buy, you've got to make sure that your ads are correct. And they don't always have enough money to do that. In fact, probably the most any one company spends on advertising testing is maybe they do 10 to 20% of their ads max, and they're only TV. And even though that doesn't even begin to cover all of their creative, it's all they have money for. So the industry is certainly changing to change that paradigm and make it affordable for them to measure everything. Anyway, back to, you know, the point is, what I've been so struck by is the forward thinking. I've heard hardly anybody talk about evaluation and how did we, you know, how do we look, you know, do we have seats at the table? I mean, I don't hear that at all. It's, you know, we need to place $5 million in media. We need to get it right. We need to make sure that we have the intelligence to do that and the insights to do that.
So to everyone, do we think that there may be an issue here about cart before horse or a vicious circle in a sense? Because what I'm hearing is that budgets are an issue, but they're based around the total budget for the communications function and its lack of resource to devote to measurement. But I mean, the success of market research has been effectively to unlock a need for research to justify activities prior to the activities actually happening. Do we think that's something that we could see eventually, is something that could happen within the PR function? Is it something that's likely to occur? Maybe Guy, do you have a thought about that?
That's a good question. I think there's a few things in there. In terms of using insights and research for planning, I think actually that one of the trends of the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years has been this rise of the planner in the PR world, where as Andy says, insights are not nice to have, but they're critical, and they tend to be sourced from market intelligence. And I suppose we then get into the question of the differences between advertising and comms, which are, you know, in comms you can't tell the same story twice. So it's harder to test what you're doing in a sort of live environment in the way that, you know, even where ads aren't being necessarily tested with research groups, you can test 10 different creatives on Facebook in 5 minutes and see which ones work. And there's the sort of Darwinian checks that go in there. And I think that just the very nature of our activity is that because it has to evolve and you have to do different things each time, it makes it much harder to test it in advance beyond the fact that it sits at a campaign planning level. That, though, is a very different thing to measuring how effective that has been. And again, taking Angie's point, communications isn't just about measuring, you know, the end of term report, how do we do? That should, you know, what you have done should inform what happens in the future. But it's just a very, very different sort of data gathering.
Yeah, and I suppose that brings us to a thought about whether there is a difference between campaign planning and well thought out and considered creatives within PR that are planned in advance and strategized very carefully against, for instance, the need or the ability of measurement to provide insight around, let's say, crisis management functions. And I wonder, David, whether you had a thought about the difference between the kind of backward-looking performance measurement function of measurement and its ability to help manage ongoing real-life or real-time situations like companies find themselves in quite often with reputational crises.
You know, I think in a way we, the measurement world of public relations, have done ourselves to a degree a disservice in the sense that what we often will talk about and we'll often, when we're selling, if you will, we say, we're going to show you, we're going to prove your value, Mr. PR practitioner. We're going to demonstrate your even potentially return on investment. And that's a very static metric. You know, this is how you did. This is how many of your messages reached the right people. The difference between that and campaign planning, and to Angie's point about insight, where you're basically instead asking the question, you know, how do I express myself? How do I tell my story the best way through the best channel to trigger both an emotive and an intellectual response in my target audience? That's a very different question, and I would argue the way we position PR measurement has nothing to do with that, or very little to do with that emotive and non-emotive, tangible response by a potential a customer in response to a campaign. You know, I think one of the reasons market research is so much bigger than PR measurement is because market research, in many respects, if you are tracking to your point a crisis, how a client is handling something, you're not telling the client, oh yeah, your numbers went up or down. What instead you're doing is you're using that market research to say, and here is how you ought to respond, or in many cases, don't respond. Whatever you do, don't respond. This is not an issue. Don't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. But you can provide that kind of directive, you know, here's what to pay attention to and here's what to forget versus, oh, yeah, your number went up, your number went down. And I think we've relegated in measurement so much of the time to your number went up, went down. You have therefore proved or not proved your value.
Any thoughts from either Angie or Guy on David's comments? Because I think there is something very interesting here about
yes.
Oh, sorry, Angie, go ahead. You jump in.
No, I just really agree, of course, with everything David said, and the whole idea of proving our worth. We talk about that way too much in our industry. You know, for the marketing side, it is do or die. I mean, you know, if you don't get the message right, you don't create the creative right, you're talking, you know, huge sales losses. It's do or die for the business. To Guy's point, you know, there are no two stories that are the same unless you put out a press release. I mean, I've never understood the concept of frequency in PR because of that, because no two pieces are exactly the same. And it can't, by its very nature, have too much influence because there are only so many publications out there that are going to do the story. I'm not really addressing social media. So it's just a smaller and very important, but a smaller fish in the pond. And you know, I have changed so much in my own philosophy from thinking that clip books and all of that matter to moving to, can't PR people do a little bit of research before and after? Can't they have a sample size of 150 and see if there's any change at all? That isn't overly expensive, and it seems like that would be much more worth looking at and reporting on than how many stories we got.
Yeah, I think the measurement industry as a whole seems to be moving somewhat towards that view. And in fact, the last topic I wanted to come on to with you guys was really how the success of market research, from my experience and talking to market research agencies, successful ones, is how important the notion of insight and storytelling has become to market research, and maybe not so much in the advertising effectiveness work that you're doing, Angie, but certainly I think the notion that market research is just about flinging data at clients and leaving them to get on with understanding it is something that maybe harkens back maybe 10, 15 years when clients had large, end user clients had large market research insight departments of their own with data wonks in them that would massage the data to tell a story. It's now being pushed back onto the market research players themselves. And I'm interested to know whether you as a panel think that growth of insight and storytelling is something that the communications measurement business can embrace, and if so, whether PR clients for that kind of work would pay what would be necessary to pay for such good, interesting, insightful work. I'll throw that open to any of the panel. Guy, I see.
I'll picking up on the points that David made earlier. I think we need to distinguish between market research, which informs planning, and measurement research, which talks about effectiveness and informs future planning. But I think, and I think in the former respect, I think PR is is very much a buyer of market research services. Now, that might very often mean digesting an intel report, or it might mean interviews with target audiences or with proxy target audiences in order to determine what are those key interventions that communications can make. Perhaps unsurprisingly, I'd take some issue with Angie around suggesting that communications can't have too much influence because there aren't very many titles. I mean, I think actually when you start getting those stories right, you start to identify the levers that really can start to shift reputation amongst the right stakeholders, and that can set off a chain reaction. So I think it'd be wrong to say that communications don't use market research. I think what we're talking about here is the use of, use of evaluation at the end of it. And certainly there is an awful lot more that the industry could be doing to improve its effectiveness. And again, I think Andy struck on a very, very sort of clear point, which is in marketing, it's do or die, and you have to prove your worth. And of course, the thing that becomes more difficult in communications terms is that very often the objective is far more nuanced. Very often the objective will be to stop people from changing their minds about something, or to sort of shape a body of opinion, or to stop people from having a point of view. And in other words, there isn't a winning line in quite the same way that there is in marketing, which is, did we make a sale or not? That's very, very binary. And I think where measurement gets into difficulties is when you're measuring much more nuanced responses amongst often harder to reach audiences, without a specific stimulus that you can assess, whether the effectiveness of something.
That's a very interesting point. And I want to turn to David finally for a brief comment on this, because I think your experience in the past spanning both market research and PR research, I wonder whether you've got a view about what counts as an insight for PR measurement, actually. We've heard some different views from Angie and from Guy. I'm curious to know what your thoughts would be.
I guess, we started here at the research group in Ketchum to add planners to our group about 5 years ago. And we've added maybe a half dozen so far, really from the perspective of trying to get into, let's call it, the insight business. And I'm not sure there is a real insight element to measurement in and of itself. In other words, in the following way, if you're like, we tend to define an insight here not as a sort of dressed up data finding. And mind you, insight to me is one of those words that is not black and white. Mm. Everybody's in, you know, what I will think is hugely insightful, you'll go, yeah, that's just a nice piece of information that you got. but I think where true insight occurs is the intersection, again, of sort of information data with the why is that occurring, with the what is the emotive characteristic usually of a target audience that makes that relevant. So if the measurement professional was to be taking, and again, if we're going to stick with just media measurement and to look at, you know, are we getting, how do we measure what is the right coverage? And if we were looking at that right coverage from not only the perspective of intellectual triggers of an action or an attitudinal shift, but also the emotive insights that usually a planner will help you come up with by thinking a little more right brain than left brain, you know, I think we'd move closer to that. But honestly, and not to be so negative, but I find it hard to think that the measurement, strictly measurement world is going to get to what I would call a planner level insight anytime soon without hiring a few planners to help you get there in many respects.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective, David. And I wonder whether another component of that is that the clients, of course, have to get savvy also about the power of those emotive elements, for instance. And I think one of the future podcasts that we'll be developing will be around non-traditional metrics, which will include things like emotional resonance measurement, and ways to do that from outputs rather than having to look at primary research with consumers to gain outcomes-based measurement. But I do think there is a real issue here, and I'm conscious of time moving on, that there is a real issue here about the sophistication of a PR function's approach to data and some of the conversations and discussion points that we've made ourselves today. Angie, maybe you've got a final thought before we wrap up.
Yes, I was hoping to have a chance. One of the most interesting bits of research we have done recently, and we're finishing up an IPR paper on it, is the fact that PR impacts advertising success. And so, you know, there may be a more holistic way of looking at this if PR can make ad creative score much higher, then the media dollars spent on that ad are more successful. We've just done a huge study with AT&T on 32,000 clips and saw a small correlation in this regard. But the other company we used was Hotels.com, and we saw a very nice, very high correlation. Actually, all the correlations were very high between non-paid media and ad effectiveness. So, you know, there are other ways, I think, other ways we're going to learn to look at the whole picture that'll be more interesting.
Great. Well, I think that's probably the rallying cry that we need to wrap up our brief conversation today. I just wanted to thank everybody that's been on this call, David Rockland, Guy Corbett, and Angie Jeffrey, for some really interesting insights and debate. We'd be happy for anybody who's been listening to this podcast to contribute by offering comments on our website at themeasurementpractice.com. Hope that you will join us for our next podcast in the near future. Thank you all for listening.